You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the co-host of this wonderful podcast. And joining me on the other line for our weekly show is Mr. Tony Easton. Tony, in honor of the late Alex Trebek, who passed away, I think, about 12 hours ago as we were recording this podcast, I'm going to give you one Jeopardy question, the only Pacers-related Jeopardy question ever to appear in the show, at least what I can find on the internet. Are you ready for it?
Sure.
All right. Let me pull it up. Okay, I had it up on my Google, but then you know I opened Twitter up on my phone, so let's see. All right, just give me one more second. I'm really unprepared for this. All right, so there's only Pacers-related one. It said, in 2000, this former Celtics player coached the Indiana Pacers to the NBA Finals. What is the answer?
Very, very, very cool, Adam.
What is the answer?
I should know this, and I really don't.
In 2000, this former Celtics player coached the Indiana Pacers to the NBA Finals.
Am I being an idiot?
Yeah, you're being an idiot.
Larry Bird?
Yes, who is Larry Bird? Thank you.
Who is Larry Bird? I don't know why Isaiah Thomas popped in my head and I couldn't get him out.
Well, he did not play for the Celtics. But
I'm fired from the show. I knew that.
Well, as people might not know, Tony has delayed a couple podcasts in the past to finish Jeopardy episodes.
I have.
We are big Jeopardy fans here, and me and Marina, our Marina especially, like, and her family. So we're just remembering Alex Trebek because that obviously is kind of a legend passing away. Anyways.
Pacers.
Yes, on to the Pacers. So on today's show, we are going to kind of follow what we did last week and do some news bits on the top of the first segment, and then we're going to do Old the Depot's season recap and talk about some potential trades, maybe not necessarily private teams, but what teams might want in him and really what his future looks like with the Pacers, because it certainly is murky at this moment. But the first news we have is that J. Michael from the Indy Star is reporting that T.J. McConnell will be returning to the Pacers. I think no surprise, right?
Yeah, I wrote a thing about, you know, it's an easy to – we talked about it on the show. We both landed in the same place. There was a tiny reason because the cap could fall that he might be gone, but easiest decision ever to keep him. They would only save a tiny bit of money, and he's good, and he's good for the locker room. He's a good player. He's a good dude for the community. You know, he just encouraged people to vote on his Instagram last week. So yeah, no brainer to bring him back for many, many reasons. And then now, yeah, J. Michael Indy Star reporting that the Pacers are intending to keep him past his return date. So they will, I think his exact wording was like barring a unforeseen crazy circumstance or something, which would be like Steph Curry wanting to come for the minimum or something. They will be keeping T.J. McConnell. So no surprise, but that's the first official report. And because it makes all the sense in the world, I have no reason to believe that that is incorrect. So there we go. T.J. McConnell will be back on the roster next season.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Even at $3.5 million, he can easily be your 11th guy on the bench, and even play minutes. It's still worth it.
Yeah, even I imagine if Nate Bjorkgren says I want to play Aaron Holiday, great. I would still keep T.J. McConnell on the roster.
Yeah, and I think one because of injuries. Obviously, Brogdon's been hurt a decent amount the past couple of years. Oladipo's been hurt, so that right there would get him into the rotation immediately. And I think it sounds like the Pacers are going to probably follow the Raptors model and maybe play 11, 12 kind of man rotations or deep based on kind of a resting schedule. When, especially with a condensed season, I'm sure we'll see some more resting for some of their stars, especially Brogdon and Oladipo, just to keep them fresh.
Absolutely, yeah. That's a good, you know, reason for Lamb and Sumner to be optimistic as well. But, yeah, in the case of McConnell, who even if – right, last year he said in his entrance interview, whatever the right word is, the Pacers put up on their website, he wasn't promised a role, right? He knew that coming in he could not be in the rotation. In the very first game it kind of looked like that, and boom, he earned his spot. Maybe that'll happen again. Maybe they'll lean in more to youth with their new coach. But again, makes all the sense in the world to keep him back. And yeah, he'll probably play a ton anyway. So perfect.
And so the other news that J. Michael's kind of reporting, I guess he may have previously reported this, but he re-upped
leapfrogging it. Using a report from Ian Begley of the New York Post to add context to a Pacers report is how I would say it.
Yeah. Anyways, he said basically the Pacers or Justin Holley, the Pacers are his first option when it comes to what he wants to do in the offseason. Obviously, that probably means are the Pacers willing to give him the full mid-level, especially if the Knicks, who have a ton of cap space, can probably sign him to, unless they're, I'm missing something, can give him a ton of money, at least in a one-year deal if they wanted to, just to kind of tie up their cap for the year. So that means basically give him the full mid-level and how many years they give him. That'll probably be the deciding factor, if I had to guess.
Yeah, Ian Begley's title is Some Knicks Decision Makers See Justin Holiday as a Strong Addition in Free Agency. And he's a you know, he'd be a good fit for them. They need shooting and defense very badly on the New York Knicks. And Jay Michael says that the plan really hasn't changed for the Pacers. Both sides have talked, and it looks like he's a Pacers player to lose there as option number one. So I agree with you that basically, well, I'm sure he's a smart guy and his agent's smart, and they'll say, hey, the Knicks are offering us their cap space and this much money. You got to offer this much and try to get the full mid-level out of the Pacers, and that's what it'll come down to.
Yeah, I mean, if the Knicks renounce Portis, I assume they will, maybe I expect them to have Portis and Taj Gibson and Wayne Ellington, they get like somewhere in like the $40 million cap space range, I think, even a little higher. I don't know. I think that's about right, depending on if the cap is at 109. Obviously, he wouldn't get that much money, but they could offer him a very easy, you know, 1-for-18 deal or something. That's probably a little rich, but something where it's just like more money than he's worth in a single year, but enough to them because he brings in a veteran and he locks up, and it kind of lets him push their cap space another season. Obviously, they see that they still have a ton of cap space too. They can probably give him a 2-year deal in that range, but I assume if the Pacers come in with, let's say, 3-for-30, which is probably the full mid-level, that's what he'll take if they're willing to do it. And that's the question is, are they willing to do it?
I agree. Sounds like the Pacers are kind of leaning into some roster continuity if we want to pair up those McConnell and Holiday rumors. And it makes a lot of sense given where they are.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff they would move, we talked about Miles Turner last week, and we'll get to Oladipo today. But I think they're changing the coaching staff this time instead of the roster, which is, you know, different from the last couple of seasons.
Well, so here's the thing, too, about Justin Holiday. If you sign him, let's say, 3-for-30, right? Isn't that basically what Jimmy Lamb got? Am I wrong? Yep. About that range, right?
He was better this year.
Yeah, he was better. Jimmy Lamb was the year before, so, I mean, that makes sense. But then you basically – because, like, he – basically, their fifth or sixth guy by the playoffs, right? Obviously, it's majors and whatnot, but he was starting by the end of the playoffs. And so, even if, like, you decide, oh, we don't have room to play him or whatnot, then you've got, you know, two $10 million guys that easily can be moved, I'm sure. Maybe not for, like, a ton, but they could be put in a trade for a bigger player or whatnot. It just locks in the asset and a guy who I don't think in the next 3 years is going to fall off to a point where he's not worth maybe even, like, at a max $5 or $7 million. So, it's probably worth it to lock up the asset. Because I think next year
he
worth
he 10, was a sure. $5 million player basically before the Pacers, and he got better. So even if he regresses to that level, it's not like the worst overpay of all time.
No, and if he shoots what he did from three, he can be valuable just as like a basically one-use player, right? Bring him in to stretch the floor and shoot the three, basically. So, yeah, I mean, I think it just makes a lot of sense, like I said, to keep the asset because if not – the good thing about where he set up is that you at least have the mid-level still, so it's not like you lose the ability to even replace him in some way. But there also isn't that much talent. So you out there, we, you know, we went through all those free agencies for a while, and there are some guys who maybe make sense, but I'm not sure they're going to come to Indiana. So, I mean, the only way I think you don't try to re-sign him is if you think he wants way too much money or wants like a 4-year deal, and I'd be hesitant to give him 4 because he's 31 years old. Or if you think you can get somebody better for that mid-level, and if that's a possibility, then move on. I mean, that's – but it seems – more likely to bring him back on like a, you know, 3-for-30-ish deal, to me at least.
Yeah, I think we'll see, but that makes a lot of sense to me.
And so then the kind of final news bits are involving assistants. So
almost the same exact thing as last week, but we just have to change the names.
Yep. So last week, Dan announced that Dan Burke was going to be a Philadelphia 76ers assistant. And then the Pacers were bringing in, I'm blanking, Danny Manning. Sorry, Danny Manning. This week, it was announced that Nate McMillan one took a job in Atlanta, so that's good to know.
Yes, Popeye. Oh yeah, I completely forgot to even bring that up. Very cool for Nate McMillan. I think working for Lloyd Pierce is a sweet gig because Nate kind of gave Lloyd Pierce some guiding advice when he, you know, reached head coaching ranks. But be an assistant job for that team, perfect for him right now.
Nice landing spot, and it puts him in a position to be able to get a head coaching job again someday.
Yes.
So then the other part of that is Popeye is going to Philadelphia as well. Yep. I think the way I saw the report, I think it might have been from Jay Michael as well, was that Bjorken doesn't want single type coaching, like who can only kind of do one type of coaching. He wants guys who can coach every part of the game, I guess, and you know, can go from being coaching centers to guards and whatnot. And obviously Popeye was kind of the center specialist. That might be the reason that he moved on. And he'll be great in Philly to fit with Joel Embiid, where they have a very good center who could obviously use some development still. And so that would be good for Popeye out there. And the Pacers are bringing in Greg Foster, a 13-year NBA vet, center, played for a bunch of different teams, including the Pacers for a little stint. So,
yes, Popeye worked a lot with Turner and Sabonis, especially pregame, which was always really cool. Really cool dude, really well liked by the team. He's off to Philly. I think he has a good coaching relationship with Dan Burke, right? They worked on FIBA stuff together, right? So that's pretty cool. They have some international experience as well. So I think they're a good pairing that that'll help out in Philly. Good for them. And then Greg Foster is coming in to the Pacers. He played for, 1,000 teams from 1990 to 2003. He was on the Lakers in 2001 when they won the title, so he's got a championship. And then he played for the Pacers in the 2002 preseason. Didn't make the final roster, but there are pictures of him in a Pacers jersey, so good enough for me to feel good about it. And then 10 years after his time in the league, you know, he did some lower-level coaching. He was an assistant for the 76ers, the Bucks, and most recently the Hawks. So they basically traded Nate McMillan for Greg Foster. And, I don't know what his area of expertise is, but Bjorkman's guy. And like you said, since he wants to do the rotating responsibilities, and I want to get to another news thing in a second off of that, seems like Foster could be doing a variety of things. And the thing I want to add to that is there's been reporting from a lot of guys, Agnes, Jay Michael, and I think I read it somewhere else too. Bill Baino is staying. And part of the reason he is staying with the Pacers is that he'll be, more front. He'll be higher up on the totem pole on the bench, right? He'll be a front of the bench guy now. And I think because Bjorkman does the, rotating responsibilities, that's good for Baino to get more exposure, get more experience, and be more involved. So it sounds like for all indications, Baino is staying as well. So now we know three assistants, assuming the Danny Manning hire is real.
Yeah, and it seems like Baino has a good relationship with a couple of the young Pacers players and Sabonis and Holiday, Aaron Holiday, that is. And so that's important to keep.
I think Baino's in L.A. with Sabonis right now.
That's what Jay Michael, we're really lying on Jay Michael today, but always
doing the reporting recently. Yeah. Baino is in L.A. for sure. So that's cool. That sounds like the staff is starting to form a little bit. I'm looking forward to the Pacers officially announcing these. It makes it hard for us to for sure say any of them are true, though. I think Mark Stein, who reported both hires, is a very well-connected guy. So that's all the news. A lot of very interesting stuff going on.
I think there's one more news bit, and I didn't tell you
this.
I think we should talk about how, the draft is set. We're probably going to get free agency this month.
Oh, yeah.
And the season starting the 22nd. I kind of teased it on Friday, and I wasn't sure if it was official by then, but it looks like the NBA season is going to start December 22nd, which means that's in, as we're recording, we're looking at
40 days.
Yeah, I think we're looking at 44 to be exact. 44 days from now, between now and then, we have to have a draft, a free agency, and a training camp. Training camp is going to start December 1st, which I believe is 23 days from now. Draft is 10 days from now. And then free agency could happen, obviously, in between there. So going to be a wild, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks as we head into Thanksgiving and Christmas and whatnot, and then a new season, and then we're back to doing our, daily BS.
Once they get the cap figured out, it'll all just start flying. Like, it'll just be so fast. Trades, draft, free agency, training camp will be in 20 days. Like, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah, and I think that sort of leads into what we're going to talk about next, because with all this craziness going on, there is one player who's been floated about, being moved or whatnot, time. Short training camp could affect him, and that's Victor Oladipo. And so we're going to take one quick break, and then we will recap his 2019-20 season and talk about him going forward. All right, so before we dive into Victor's entire season, I think we should just break down his stats real fast. So he appeared in 19 games, starting 16 of them. He averaged 14.5 points. He averaged 3.9 rebounds and 2.9 assists on a 39.4 and 31.7 shooting splits. That's field goal to three-point percentage. In the past two seasons, he's appeared in a total of 55 games after what we would say is career season of 2017-18. And I think the best way to describe his 2019-20 was he's back to playing basketball at a level, which is important to see just in the start.
Yeah, it's hard with his stats to really tell the story because, frankly, and you were all over this too, like when he was playing with those bench groups for his first three games, that was stupid, right?
It was garbage, and it made no sense because he had he was playing six minutes of starter, six from the bench, and no continuity, and just like either just start him or play him in the bench. Like just pick one and let him do it.
Sorry. And to less credit to Vic and more credit to the Pacers with that decision, he was terrible. Like no matter who he was playing with, he would have been just a useless player. He was taking a ton of shots and missing basically all of them. His defense wasn't quite there. The no burst, right? So his stats for about a month, right? All of February, he was pretty bad.
Yeah, the last day of February, he had a nice game, but
he's pretty bad. Then he gets a couple days off right when March starts. And then in March, he was kind of okay. He averaged 17.2 points, 5.3 rebounds, and 3.6 assists in March on 42-37-85 splits, right? That's pretty good. That I am so sorry. That included the bubble. That is not his March.
So yeah. So
let me rephrase that. Everything after that.
Before you move on, I do want to about March because I do think a poor thing to high with him. And I remember we did this podcast before the pandemic started, before this, you know, the world went to hell for 8 months and counting. On March 10th, I thought he had his best game maybe of the season.
Yeah, by far.
And I thought at that moment he had kind of turned the corner. And here's particularly why. So you take that fourth quarter Celtics game, and I believe they were heading into that fourth quarter. They were down somewhere between 10 and 15 points. And they really – look, they were out of the game. I mean, they ended up actually being a plus 11 in the fourth quarter and almost clawing their way back. And he had this amazing fourth quarter where he played 8 minutes in that quarter, which is a ton of that time for him, considering how many he already played in that game. He had 12 points on 2 of 4 shooting from three. He tried to go for the dagger and missed it, but who could blame him? He had 4 of 8 overall. I mean, I thought that was the moment. I thought for a moment, oh, he's finally turning the corner. And, like, he was a little out of shape. Like, still had like he was completely like fully energy in that game, but he like had hit that kind of moment where, like, oh, this is the Vic I remember in the fourth quarter, just turns the gas on and kills teams. So
that was the stats I read a lot for his March plus bubble regular season stats, which if you look at those, you'd say, okay, those are okay. To be specific to March, 19.7 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists on 45, 44, 80. Ridiculous, right? And you're right. We did talk about after that Celtics game, you've been like, wow, damn, this is the best we've seen from Vic. If the season carries on, this is huge. How can this carry forward? And if you'll recall, the game right before that, they played the Mavs, and he went toe-to-toe with Luka in the fourth quarter and won them the game, right? So
yep.
That was the best we had seen Vic all season. So his stats are really tough to say this is what, you know, this is what he was, because at first he was awful, and then he got a little better in March, and then start of the bubble was – you know, shooting okay. Of his first couple games, he was over 50% shooting in many of them. And then he had a stinker against the Heat, and then a real stinker against the Rockets. And then the playoffs were also pretty rough. And I'm just back to not really knowing where he's at or what to expect from him going forward, because the climb up makes me personally kind of optimistic that he can be okay, but he was mostly bad. So I don't really know what to think of where he's at.
So, I'm pulling up a stat real fast. I think maybe this is too much, and I'm reading too much. He didn't play enough minutes, but with these guys. But I think the difference between his March and his bubble, I think really involved not playing with Sabonis, if I'm being honest. I mean,
That's totally fair.
So if you take, he wasn't like fantastic with Sabonis in terms of advanced stats. I mean, he had a negative net rating on the court with him.
He had a negative net rating with, like, everybody,
though. Yeah, so it was -3 of Sabonis, and actually he was about even with Turner on the floor. But some of that is they played a lot of minutes of the bubbles together, and I think if you throw T.J. Warren in that, you get, like, that's why you see that, you know, positive net rating on the court together, because Warren was carrying some of his lineups. But I do think not being able to play with Sabonis in that month really hurt him, because what had made Oladipo so successful in the past was you kind of put him in a pick and roll, and he could – almost take the guy to the rim every time, right? It wasn't that he could, like, always have the perfect pass or whatnot, but it's the fact that he could play a lot of really good two-man games with Sabonis, whether it was a dribble handoff or whatnot, or just letting, you know, screen and roll to the rim or whatnot. And he didn't really have that in the bubble, and he put the ball in his hands and had him dribble a ton, and he didn't quite have his handle in the bubble. I think part of it was probably thinking too much and too worried about everything and whatnot. And he clearly doesn't have the explosion he had pre-injury, but I think the game is easier for him when he's playing with Sabonis, somebody who was like kind of just creates all this action for him and allows him to get kind of cleaner shots, if that makes sense.
Turner spacing helps him. We've seen that his whole career. And Sabonis' playmaking helps him, which we've also seen his whole career. So it's a little bit of both, I think, where he could be.
But the thing with Turner spacing was it worked when they had Thad, who then provided the kind of Sabonis like pick and rolls, right? We haven't seen we saw the Vic with no kind of guy like that, and that really was not successful. Now, couple of reasons could have thrown on that not being successful, and not that Turner was actually pretty decent in some of his lineups, it just was Vic wasn't good in those lineups, and maybe it's more Vic's fault than Turner's fault, but Vic clearly needs kind of that, like, somehow traditional big, whether it's a 4 or 5 out there to sort of help facilitate in some ways, it feels like.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense to me. I think the rotating revolving door of bigs, whatever you want to call it, played a factor, right? And the bubble had that game, he took 26 shots, right? They really...
Well, that was a BS game, but yeah.
He was bad.
Well, they were just like, they were playing the Rockets, who weren't playing anybody either, right? They was like
No, it was kind of a meaningless game, and he played 37 minutes.
Yeah, that's what was stupid about it.
But, And then the playoffs, he played a lot of minutes outside of the first game when he got hurt mid-game. He played a lot of minutes every game. They were close. You know, they were minus two, minus five, and minus seven in his three substantial minutes games. So they were, like, pretty close, but also losing every time. So, again, I'm back to, like, it stands out watching it to me that he just mostly was ineffective, right? His defense was – he couldn't be the roaming steel hog beast that he was in the years past, and he couldn't really hawk the ball as much. And he was fine on defense, right, at times, but struggled chasing shooters and stuff too. On offense, we saw some of the burst lacking, some of the fear of contact at the rim. But also we saw him get better a lot. You know, his pull-up three was pretty dang good. Not quite the level it was early 2017, but pretty
dang good.
He had enough ball handling to create some space, right? So I can't help but wonder, right, is the guy we saw from him in the bubble the guy he'll be going forward? Is the playoff guy he'll be going forward? Or does he have more in the tank? He seems to think he'll have more and it will be better. And I struggled to figure out exactly what to make of what we saw, because there was such a mixed bag of, you know, a 7-for-26 night, or all of February he had one game shooting over 50% and only two games over 40%, right? Putrid, versus this decent run of play in March in the bubble where he was, you know, a team player and helping them win important games. And I don't really know what to make of it.
So I think the thing about the bubble that was the most concerning was his handle. So, like, you look at his turnovers, mm-hmm. he actually,
yeah,
compared to playoffs, so 2017 versus 2019, about the same amount of turnovers per game. But I think the turnovers he probably had in 2017 and 18, if I just from watching the games, remember them, where they were passing turnovers, where he was making, you know, miss the read or whatever, or try to force a pass. It's something that's a little more aggressive, versus these were just like kind of bad turnovers where, like,
his handle.
Yeah, it gets pickpocketed, basically. Yep. And that if he doesn't get that figured out, then I don't think he ever can go back to where he was before, because what made him so good before is that, I mean, I've watched basketball for about 20 years now, and I've never, maybe more like 15, maybe I'm exaggerating because I am only 23, 15 to 16 years, whatever, 15 to 17 years since like 03, 04. I've never seen a guy be able to close around the rim in a Pacers uniform the way he was able to that 17, 18 season. He could literally, when he got around the rim, he could just, I mean, he found ways to create a foul and get contact or and lay it off the glass, like almost every time. And that's watching Paul George, who for years could never do that. Like, that was Paul George's biggest weakness. He'd get inside the lane, he couldn't get the right contact, and then he'd throw up the terrible shot that he'd miss. And so if he can't do that again, I'm not sure he can get back to his, like, peak level. But I also like to say is that I think he did show some signs in the bubble that, like, he is getting better and, like, improving. And I think the coaching in that bubble particularly was completely just, like, garbage to begin with. Like, I don't think Mill had any idea how to run an offense that was kind of like built around five stretch players. And I think there's some hope that this new coach can do that, because they ran nothing creative that made any sense, except they did like what's that called when you do like the figure eight passing, basically, and that kind of worked, but like that was their only wrinkle. And it's like he had 5 3-point shooters and really never figured out how to make that like at all. And he had all summer to figure out, maybe, you know, I guess Sabonis got hurt the last minutes that threw a wrinkle in his whole thing, but just like, McMillan was totally out of depth when it came to coaching this kind of lineup in the playoffs, or the bubble slash playoffs, I thought.
Yeah, that's why he got fired. Yeah, it was time for that. But yeah. It's a factor, right? Him playing in an awful system is certainly a factor. But even with McMillan as his coach, he's had good playoffs before, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think at 17-18, we knew what they were running, right? Like, they had a system. And I don't think in the playoffs they really had a system.
I don't think it was marginally different either year, honestly.
Well, so, like, I think 17-18 was, like, a clunky system, but, like, we knew what it was. It was, if you have open 15-footer, take it. We're going to run things around Oladipo and really heavily rely on him to just kind of carry us, right? It was like, we're going to just isolate Oladipo one-on-one against either we're going to get the switch on a weaker defender, or we're going to set a screen with Thad for him. And, like, I get it wasn't, like, super creative, but you kind of had the identity. I think in 1920, it was like, well, Warren's hot now. Let's see if he can keep scoring. Oh, he can. Oh, okay. Maybe let's see what Barden can do. Okay, he can't. So it'll be like, it was very much like, maybe this, maybe that. There was no like clear identity. Now they lost their arguably best player last year in that run, so that makes sense. But it was still kind of really disappointing, I guess.
Yeah, I don't remember that many differences offensively between the two sets outside of a slightly smaller group with Justin, especially. They got a little more close to that 17-18 stuff, but I just, in the playoffs, he was like, The first game he played a ton of minutes in, game two, I just thought Victor was not very good. And he, having the ball as much as he does, if you're not very good, you're really killing your team. And even if you're getting better in other times, it's just – I want to see more from him, and it makes it hard to figure out what his future is with the Pacers.
Yeah, I will say interesting what if is, what if he doesn't get poked in the eye in that game one and the rest of the game? Because they were – I don't think they were winning by the time he got poked in, but they were
– They were winning.
They were winning, okay. I couldn't remember that. Like, they were competitive, and they came out
– They were winning at halftime that game.
They came out pretty high energy and whatnot. So I would be interested to see. Obviously, the Heat won the series because they had amazing third quarters. It's kind of what killed the Pacers the entire series, except for maybe I think it was game three where it was reversed. But I don't know. I'd be interested to see. I think it started spiraling, right? They lost game one, and then he was like kind of – he was fine in game two, but you can kind of tell he was squinting and had kind of a red eye, and it just kind of spiraled out of control by that point. So I don't know. I'd be interested to see what the what if on that is. He's had a lot of what ifs, right? If they counted that as a goaltending game five of 2018, he might have won a playoff series for all we know.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you got anything else with his season before we move on to kind of like him going forward?
Not really. No. Nope.
Okay. So let's take one more break and then we'll do some discussion on Oladipo, what it means going forward for him. So how do you want to start this, Tony? Do you want to go talk about like the trade rumors we've all hearing? Do you want to talk about what he needs to do next season to get back to his, 18 self, will he get back? Where do you want to go? I'll let you kind of dictate it.
Well, I did a pod on what he, the trade rumor that came out from The Athletic and how that matches up with stuff that's been heard before. Now, the most recent reporting I've read is Barry Jackson of South Sun Sentinel, I believe. He's a Heat reporter. The Heat are interested in him, but it sounds like the Pacers they extend Oladipo, maybe they can keep him and blah, blah. But I think to start with, last week with Miles Turner, we talked about, okay, if you move Turner, what are you looking for? Are you looking for picks, a contributor? What are you looking for? I think with Depot, his value is probably a little less than Turner, and I have the same question, right? You're looking, but it's a little different to me because with Turner, if you trade Turner, you're not looking for a center return, 100%. That's the reason you're doing it. With Victor, you might be looking for the exact same position in return, and that kind of opens up a new can of worms of, like, what exactly you're looking for in return. Do you want the same position and just a different whack at it, like Buddy Hield, or do you want to go for the pick route, which we both think is not the smartest move but isn't off the table, or are you looking for a different position altogether? And that's where I think is an interesting starting point. If they move on from him, we can get to other stuff too.
So in my opinion, I actually think Oladipo has slightly more value than Turner, and the only reason is because of his upside. And two, I do think the team that – if he gets traded, or whatever, and has him, and the Pacers have this right now too, the ability to sign him to an extension using bird rights is going to be a pretty big deal, I think, to him, especially with what we know about the NBA cap and whatnot, and the whatever's going to kind of the escrowing of money, and you're going to not want a ton of money the next 2 years. Basically, you're going to actually want to kind of backload contracts now if you can to get more money at the end of it. Hopefully, assuming fans return, and I do think that's where he has more value. If I Turner were like, there's just not the upside of Turner, right? Turner is Turner. You know who he is. He's a good player. What 50, 70 player, but like Oladipo has the upside if you trade for him, and he's not going to be super expensive. I just think if Turner got traded for a top 20 pick, I'd be surprised. Oladipo, if you gave me 18 to 20, I might not be super surprised.
Interesting. I personally think Turner has a little bit more value, but not really relevant to this discussion.
Yeah. I mean, it's minimal if it is more.
Yeah. Basically just like, I don't know it's that much different than Turner to me, where I basically just wanted to bring up that the difference to me is that you can be looking for the same position back, and that opens up a few more possibilities of, and we've talked about this before, right? Because he's expiring too, a lot more teams can be willing to take the risk, but you could be looking for a different shooting guard versus, looking for the right four or looking for the right whatever, right? In fact, if you don't trade Turner and you trade Depot, you're probably wanting just a two guard, but as opposed to other options, but it's kind of just a recycled version of the conversation from last week of what should the Pacers be looking for if they move on. And instead, there's a lot more other things like you just brought up, like the extension and what they can do with him this season that are a lot more interesting about his future.
Yeah, well, and the thing, too, to remember is there's actually just one team that has actually the cap space to sign him to a max deal next summer? Like of contending-level team. Contending-level team. I mean, okay, contending-level team, right? There's the Heat. But, like, you're talking about neither LA team will have the money. I guess they might, depending on how the cap holds.
Yeah, I think there could be quite a few, actually.
Well, so let's assume the LA teams bring all their guys back, right? I mean, I don't think, like, they're going to replace Paul George with Oladipo, but that would be kind of ironic, actually. in Clippers. But it's like probably both LA teams will be gone. Denver's got them pretty much maxed out, and they have the tradability, so that's where they have to make a move kind of. Nets will be maxed out. I mean, Warriors obviously will be too.
The Jazz could have enough space. The Raptors could have enough space.
Okay, so
obviously could have enough space.
Who? What other team you said? You said Raptors, Jazz.
Heat,
who else?
Heat, Raptors, yeah. Jazz.
Right, those are the three, right? And I mean,
all of them now. I think there's more. The Mavs will have enough space.
Okay, so I think the Mavs are the one to look at. But I think the Mavs, doesn't Luka's extension kick in? No, it's probably another year from that, right?
Yes.
One more. So maybe we're looking at, because I think it's fair to say the Jazz is kind of on the outside because you're talking about, that means they have to get rid of Gobert to make that work, I think.
No, they could use bird rights and swing some stuff.
Yeah, but isn't Gobert's cap also going to be like in the 30s?
Yeah, you don't have to use the cap to keep bird rights, though.
No, but I mean, if they won't have the cap space. They won't really have the cap to go get a max deal for Oladipo or something.
Yeah, they will.
Okay. I mean, I guess the question, are they a finals contender? And I don't necessarily know.
If they get Depot, they'll probably think they are.
Yeah, but I guess is that a different situation than what you're currently in, I guess? I don't know.
That's for the Jazz to decide.
Yeah, you're right. They will cap space because Mike Conley's contract will be up. I forgot about that. Yep. That's the big one. So, I mean, it's really the Heat and Mavs, I think. I mean, the Raptors maybe. I mean, that's obviously, they're always going to be contenders, so I don't know. But, like, those are what you're competing against. And I guess what I mean is that there's not a ton out there, I guess, in terms of – because, like, you could see both those teams filling the cap with other players depending on what happens, right? There could be a Bradley Beal move for either of those teams. Maybe Mavs more likely. Or I'm trying to think of another player could be available. But, you know what I mean? So, like, I don't think there's, like, a huge landscape the way there might be, I guess, or might have felt like there was going to be before this. And so I think that – actually might increase his trade value just a tiny bit. Like, if a team like Denver wants to make the trade for him, they can't just sign him, kind of thing. If a team
that's,
like
– that's possible. Know. I'm not sure he's limited to just contenders, though. See, that's
well, so
there. Like, I guess that's – why wouldn't the Knicks or the Cavs or the Pistons, whatever?
So,
he's good.
I guess my thing is he's going to go to the Knicks over the Pacers, you think? And maybe that's fair. And maybe we're putting it
– that's possible.
Well, maybe I have a bad impression of the Knicks, but it's like – the team is garbage. I mean, let's be real. The team is terrible. Like, right, the Knicks is better market, don't get me wrong, but the team is terrible. I'm not sure, especially if the Pacers offer more money, you would maybe be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go. I mean, I get if he's not good next to the Pacers, just say we can't sign you to that much money. But, like, if it comes down to Pacers offering more money, I don't know why he'd pick the Knicks at this stage, I guess. If he's care, because he does seem to – he has said he cares about winning. He has said that.
Yeah.
Times. And so
no, I get why you wouldn't pick the Knicks, but I get why I also get why other players would pick the Knicks.
So. Yeah, I mean, I guess if he could find his own kind of teaming up in New York, that would work, right? That would be the big thing. Could he find some other guy to pair with and want to go there? But I think for a lot of teams that want him outside of basically Miami, it's going to take a trade. And I think because that's just – and so that's where it helps the Pacers' value where, like
– that is possible.
They have the ability, one, to see how he plays for 2 months, and they could trade him then. And – because it's in relative to what he'll actually make at a max deal to what he's now, it's actually easier to trade for him now, right? So if you're a team, I don't know how much space do the Mavs have.
I have no idea how much they'll have next summer. It's on like 40 or 45 million a ton.
Right, but then if you trade for Depot now, his cap hold is only 125, right? Versus what he'll make is, let's say, 30 to 35, right, range. So yeah. Like you create a little more cap space by going getting him now, get you another player theoretically. Looks like their space is about 40 million, assuming they waive all their cap holds, which would make sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of machinations that make trading for him worth it that basically revolve around him having an expiring deal. There's less risk. There's more ways to re-sign him. It's an easier way to get him, especially because his value is stupid low right now. But I think that the Pacers know that they'll probably – this trade, if they do dish him – will be looked back upon negatively for them, and that'll make it hard for them to agree to any deal. You know, it has to either blow away, or the other team has to meet them halfway somewhere.
I don't think they can make a trade before the season starts unless they get blown away, because there's no upside to just trading for nothing. I mean, it's like you'd rather just lose him. Yeah, and then you get some cap space because he is that high of a contract where he creates a little cap space.
So I have to drop my bomb take now.
Okay, go ahead.
Even if he actively wants out and you know he's gone or whatever and he won't sign an extension, yeah, you should trade him. We've talked about that 100 times in the show. If he really does, if there's even a small inkling of him that would stay for a max extension, which is 4 for $113, I'd offer it today. Done. Here's 4
for $113. I think he's been offered, I assume.
Because – so I get that. I just grilled him for his year, right? There was a lot of stretch for he was bad, including the playoffs. He could never be good again. They're paying him through 32. Makes all the sense in the world to not do that. But he is like the best thing they could – ever get in free agency, right? Is
yeah.
what he could be. And I totally get the risks of it, but they're already tied in cap-wise. He's still going to be useful some of the time, even if it's not all of the time. He's an icon in the state. It gets rid of the cloud hanging over your team. I would do it. I would offer him 4 for $113 today and be done with it.
You think that hasn't been offered yet or going to be offered?
I don't know.
Because I feel like you take
that. There is a moratorium on spending right now, right? So there can't be anything.
Okay.
They can talk about it and all that.
I'm saying, are we not sure the first day they lift the moratorium and sign it? You know what I mean?
I'm sure that's possible. And I'm sure the second he leaves in free agency, they'll say they offered it to him. So.
Yeah. I guess my thing is,
I get why everyone says that's stupid, but I would do it.
If he's going to leave, you have to move by the trade deadline just to get something back. You
100%. Absolutely.
I do wonder, and this is probably never going to happen, but I do wonder if you can make a disgruntled player swap. And I mean, look at somebody like Drew Holiday. I'm not sure he's disgruntled where he is, but like basically both guys have a 1-year contract, right? Drew Holiday's got an option, which he could pick up, could not, probably won't. I mean, considering depending on what he can get, you know, for agency and whatnot, like, is that a possibility if you threw in enough just to swap him and see if he wants to be in a different place, right? I don't know if that's enough, but like that's kind of the thought.
Maybe.
Right? Like would that make – that would make sense, I think, for both teams. I kind of teased this on Friday, but like wouldn't it make sense to swap both players?
No, it makes sense to swap them. The Drew Hotta is better at everything right now.
But the Pacers would have to throw in some stuff. Don't get me wrong. Like if you did Oladipo, Aaron, and a first and swapped them, and that might be worth it. Because maybe there's a chance he's good next year. You can re-sign him anyways, right? They'll have his bird rights. They can re-sign him, and that might be a big thing. I don't think either team wants to spend a ton of money. And that's probably both teams, Pacers and the Pelicans, with re-signing these two players. Cause I think the Pelicans are going to be at a ton of money soon, right? You're going to pay Ingram 30 plus, Zion 2 years from now. I mean, they're going to be at a huge,
I think that's just the Pels are just shooting themselves in the foot doing that.
You think so? I mean, Well, you don't think they should trade Drew Holiday at all, right?
No, not really, but I get, right. I get why they would, but I don't get why they would for, worse Drew, basically. I think they should do it for...
Well, if Drew Holiday says he wants out, I mean, it's right, same way Oladipo says he wants out, maybe that's the best, you know what I mean?
Could do better than Oladipo for Drew Holiday. Absolutely.
I think so, too. I think Denver's the team lurking all around
this whole thing
is that they can
go get Will Barton, Gary Harris,
and that's what I wonder with the Pacers, honestly, is if Oladipo has a good start, you know he's leaving, I wonder if you just go Denver and make a trade, because you can get a lot of pieces. You're not getting Michael Porter. You're just not
even close.
No, but, I mean, but you
Gary get Harris, Victor Oladipo, I can't think of the word for some reason. Why can't I talk right now?
Swap.
Prophecy that I foretold two seasons ago will finally be coming true if it comes full circle.
Yeah, I mean, I say you want a first round pick of some kind for him just to have that asset, even if Denver's would be like the 28th pick. But I don't know. I mean, the Mavs, I think Bill Simmons around said this on their podcast, was like the Mavs give a bunch of their smaller assets, right? Like they throw in a Seth Curry and they can throw in, I don't know how many, like, or right, they've got, where they throw in Maxi Kleber, like those kind of players who just like make the Pacers better on the margins, right? And so maybe that's worth it. If you can't, you're going to lose them anyways. Do you just get a couple assets you couldn't get anyways? I don't know. I mean, I do think if you trade Oladipo, you're sort of kind of saying, unless, barring some like leap from somebody on the roster we don't know of, basically be Aaron Holiday, you're basically saying we're not having a shot at winning championship the next 3 years. You just lose him. So
exactly, and that's why I want the extension, because that gives you at least a little tiny like, hey, if he's really good again, you got a shot.
Well, and the thing with the extension too is he can always just say he wants anything and trade. He can afford to trade out. I mean, that's happened.
Yeah, that's
happens. Although I think it's hard when you have 4 years. I mean, you and I both
be 5 years. I'm talking 4 years on top of this year. It'd be a 5-year deal.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking he'd play a year and then ask out is what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But I think both
of maybe that's the ideal for the Pacers.
No, but both you and I kind of agree. Well, if you have more than 2 years in your deal, it's basically play it either shut up and play, or you cannot get paid. Because like we talked about with Kyrie with the Cavs, right? Like why do they trade him 2 years? What, he had no leverage. Just make him play. Tell me he has to play or not make any money. I mean, it's right. Especially when you can't get anything for him anyways. Like, you would better off not trading Kyrie for the assets you got from him anyways.
And lo and behold, that did not work at all. So what do we
Yeah, mean? I know. I mean, we don't, we're not GMs. We're just two people. But I feel like if you – I do want to know if they do say to him, hey, sign this deal, but we'll make you an agreement that if you want out, we'll get you out of here anyways. Give it a year. Let us see how this works. You can come back next summer. If you want out, we'll trade you. And that might be the right kind of middle ground for both teams. I do think – we do want to see him with Brogdon and Sabonis and I guess maybe Turner right now. But we do want to see at least him with Brian Sabonis, because we do think that can be successful if it's Oladipo at 90% of his.
Yeah, even when he was playing in March, Brogdon was missing time, and yeah,
exactly. I think you built this whole roster, especially with a TJ Warren who kind of keeps improving every year, it feels like, and is developing a, you know, a really good outside 3-point game. I mean, you just want to see if it can work, because you know the playoff failure can be wiped away by that, the fact that you lost your best player of the season before the bubble started. I mean, I think that's the easy excuse to say. So, and bad coaching on top of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of machinations involved here between the extension and his expiring deal and his own desires and the Pacers' current goals, and they're currently capped out. So, I mean, defensively, like, the team could turn around and do anything, and I'd be like, okay, they're doing this for this reason, and it would make sense, right? There's very little Oladipo options going forward that I'd go, huh? You know what I mean? Except for, like, trading for a crappy pick, but they're not going to do that. So,
well, and remember, if they do lose him, they do create cap space, assuming the cap is at 109, they'll have $16 million in space.
Yeah, exactly.
Losing him. So there is, they can replace him with something.
Eventually they create space, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, then they could waive some of this. Yeah, they'll have 16 in space, assuming the cap stays at 109 the next 3 years. If they doesn't reach
2 years, you mean? Yeah.
2 years, sorry, 2021, 2022.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, it was 109 last year. I meant for like a 3 from last year to 2022.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Sorry. Yes. So.
Yeah, so. I'm looking forward to seeing how it shakes out. I would personally, again, offer the big money. If he takes it, great. If he doesn't, in February, you'll be on a different team. And that's it. That is what I think of Oladipo's future.
Unless he's just fantastic and you just take the risk and run and make the playoffs and run. I mean, if he plays so good, you're like, no, we'll just see how it goes. If we lose him, we'll just be like, how could you leave this team that made now these conference finals? Screw you, basically. Give him the old Kevin Durant shoulder.
That's possible and very weird that the Pacers would ever do that, but that's possible.
Well, no, but if he's playing so good that they're like going to make like have a run in the playoffs, I'm not sure you trade him. I think you just say, "What, you're gonna leave a team that's this good, really?"
Yeah,
fine. I mean that's what you dare him to do, especially like if you beat the Heat in the playoffs. Let's say because you somehow get that good,
that the team, yeah,
right. Then he just goes to the Heat. It's like, what are you doing?
Right,
like really. Anyways, you got anything else?
I do not.
All right. Well, I think we have 4 or 5 podcasts scheduled for this week. We're going to eventually kind of switch into 5 days a week, I think, as we get into the draft and free agency and
training. Yeah, like next week. Yeah, next week might be our only non-5 days a week for basically till the season starts.
Yeah, so look forward to all those podcasts. We are continuing this player season review series. I believe we have 2 more players to do. I believe I'm doing Malcolm Brogdon this week at some point, and Tony's doing
Sumner.
Edmund Sumner, and then we will wrap these up. Wow, we made it through. Wow. And then obviously a lot of draft stuff next week, so look for all those podcasts. As always, you can follow us at Locked On Pacers. You can follow Tony at TEastNBA, me at FreedomAdam5. That is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. We will see you guys again tomorrow.